It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, everybody? This is Low Hanging Fruit. I am Charlie Marlowe. That is the great Brendan Schaefer. And Brendan, I would love to be all positive and lollipops and rainbows about your St. Louis Cardinals. But Brendan, it's pretty hard to find any positives right now with the Redbirds. Is that fair? I don't think I'm being too harsh when I say that.
No, I don't think you're being too harsh, especially as we sit here and record this podcast coming off the day where Cardinals get rained out, and the night before you lose Wilson Contreras. You had a lead when you lost Wilson Contreras. You lose that game because Miles Michaelis blows up, and that all happened after you lost a series to the White Sox. Like, it's been rough, and I don't know how it gets better soon, barring the Cardinals just coming out of it and finding a way to go up there and beat Milwaukee 3-4. But this is a spot in the season that I think we could look back on as a turning point, either for the good or for the bad.
Okay, and I had to wear my glasses because watching the Cardinals is literally burning my eyes these days.
I was wondering.
So, look, I don't like to be Mr. Hyperbole. Now, every once in a while, I'll throw out kind of a catchy title on YouTube. But then we actually do the podcast, and I think we're both pretty reasonable and rational. But I don't know how the Cardinals come back from the Wilson Contreras injury. When I say I think the season is over, look, is there a 5% chance the Cardinals could get back in this thing? It's still freaking May 8th. But man, I felt really bad about the Cardinals on Sunday when they lost to the White Sox. And then they lose two to the Mets. But most importantly, I mean, really the only dude that was hitting on your whole roster is now out for what? Probably 6 to 8 weeks, whatever it is. And Brendan, I don't know if you saw that graphic that Bally's played. They put the graphic up yesterday, and it was the percentage that Wilson Contreras was of like home runs, RBI, and whatnot. I couldn't believe that one player, it was like 25% of their home runs. And don't quote me, but like 16% of runs or RBI, 11% or 18%. It was way too much of a percentage for one player. That's how good Wilson Contreras has been offensively and how crappy the rest of the guys have been.
Yeah, he finishes now after the injury because he had a double the night he got hurt. His OPS is up to 949. It's a career high for him. And it's by far, I think it might be 200 points better than the second best guy on the team. Arenado's around 741. It's just not even close. 6 home runs leads the club. Contreras was having the type of year where he probably could have ended up starting as the catcher for the National League in the All-Star game. And now Cardinals fans are simply hoping that he can be back to play by the All-Star game with this injury. He says 6 to 8 weeks. I heard that and thought, well, that is bad, but it's not even as bad as I thought it could have been when you hear immediately a broken arm. It's always like the Cardinals, when they announce those in-game injuries, it's usually, you know, it's a contusion. It's a, we'll wait and see. We don't want to make it sound like more than it is. Nope. They did the imaging and 5 minutes later, they're like, yeah, it's broken. So from where he was as really the only light in a very dark cave for this Cardinal offense to now, that's snuffed out and he's gone for a couple of months. I agree with you that I am skeptical. I put out a tweet acknowledging like it's May 7th when I said it. I understand that, but it feels like the season is sort of at stake right now. And then, of course, this Wednesday morning on Hot Take Central, everybody gave me a hard time. Oh, Brendan's claiming the Cardinals are dead. You know, those guys don't understand nuance like us, Charlie. I don't know what to say about them. But, yeah, it really does feel like I kind of hit that seesaw from, you know, Cardinals will probably figure it out. I'm skeptical, but I could see a path to where now I'm on the other side of that line where I would today, if you ask me, hey, are they going to make the playoffs? I would say no. I would say as of today, they're not going to.
So I'm interested now. I didn't get to listen to Hot Take Central. You're I am so on for half the show. I am actually for half the show Thursday and the full show Friday. And I don't know if you were just half kidding, but did you really get a good amount of blowback on that? Because I would think now, again, if I say the Cardinals are dead, of course, could everything go right? Could they add a little bit at the deadline? Could they somehow scratch out 82, 83 and somehow win the Central? I'm not saying that's impossible. I certainly would not bet on that, but I'm kind of surprised that you even got pushback because again, this was a bad team before this happened. They had just lost a series to the worst team essentially almost. I mean, now they're not because they beat the Cardinals, but they were right there with the Rockies, right? The White Sox, their offense is just putrid. You just lost to that team, and then you lost your best player. So you're already a bad team. You lost your best player. I don't even think it's hyperbole to say the Cardinals are dead. I mean, I hope that's not the case, but if you're just looking at the team right now, I mean, I guess I'll throw it to you, Brendan. So find me the way, find me the path, as you said, to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and to clean it up a little bit, you know how it goes on that show sometimes. When the cat thinks he's got you on something, he's going to try to dig in. And I've been doing the show, you know, ever since really the beginning of the year, you went to more of a part-time role on Hot Take Central. And so the cat hasn't had a chance to really try and stick me with one yet. And he thought he had his opportunity today. And I think he blew it because I don't think he even believed what he was saying. What I said in my tweet was it's May 7th. I know it's May 7th, but just me, I'm going to have a difficult time envisioning a world in which the Cardinals lose this game because at the time, Michaelis had just given up a bunch of runs. It was still going. But if they lose this game with a whimper, then how are they going to eventually summon the tenacity to turn things around? That was sort of my stance. Whereas Cole comes on and says, Brendan declared the Cardinals dead last night on Twitter. So, of course, the cat hadn't read my tweet, and he's just kind of taking that and running with it. When in reality, it's exactly what you're saying with a little bit of nuance. I don't really see the path, and it's a binary thing. If today I have to predict will they, won't they, I'm at a won't they. But I don't think that means they're dead, but there's a long way to go to find life. How does it happen? It's guys like Lars Nootbaar and Alec Burleson who hit home runs in the game last night. It didn't end up factoring in for a Cardinal win, but those are guys that you need them to perform to career norms and maybe better. And to this point, we haven't seen it, especially from Nootbaar, who's had an OPS in the 500s. Like, he's got to go. And Brandon Donovan's got to go. You got to get all those guys back to where they were last year and then probably find a Jordan Walker that comes back from Memphis and does the same thing. It's going to be, you know, it's going to take a village within this lineup to cover up what Wilson Contreras was doing for them. And then, you know, you have to hope that the pitching stays about where it's been and they can find some more options in relief. Maybe a Keenan Middleton comes back. Look, I think it boils down to this offense and you just lost your best piece. So if you're trying to carve out a way that it happens, it's everybody else picking up the slack. It's a Paul Goldschmidt not being completely cooked, which if you watch the second game of that Mets series and the way that it ended with him, probably the worst Paul Goldschmidt at bat that I can recall seeing from him to end that game in the ninth. It was for the second out of the inning. So they need all those guys to step forward collectively and maybe an injury to their guy that has been their warrior so far can galvanize them. But without that, yeah, I don't really see the path either, which is why I made the claim that I did. And everybody said, oh, Brendan said the Cardinals are dead. I said, okay, whatever. Ha ha. But no, I really do think they're in a tough spot right now.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that one. I like the word galvanize. So good usage there. So where do you fall? I do think, I don't know if fun argument is the right word, but when this injury happens and then you have the whole debate about, okay, JD Martinez is way far back in the box. His foot is over the line. Wilson Contreras is probably, I think it's fair to say, not just probably, he's too close to JD Martinez. And then there's the debate of, oh, is the coaching staff, you know, telling him to get closer? Are you trying to steal strikes? Obviously improve your pitch framing, which last year Wilson Contreras wasn't great. I want to read this this tweet from Bernie Miklas here, and I retweeted this. It was basically, it says, MLB catcher interference infractions. In 2014, so go back 10 years. In 2014, it was one every 810 games. Then about 2018, it gets cut in half. And then the next year, 2019, you're seeing, let's say, 81. The following year, 80, 66, 51. And what I'm saying is an infraction every amount of games. So right. I didn't explain that well. In 2014, a catcher's interference once every 810 games. In 2024 so far, it's once every 32 games. I'm not a mathematician, but if you go back 10 years, that's about 24 times, I think. 24 times more catcher's interference now. So, look, Wilson Contreras, this happened to him. He breaks his arm. It's terrible. Clearly, this is happening a lot now. You see all these catchers. We talked about this on the show once where, you know, I was a catcher back in the day. You never would go to one knee, ever. And now all these catchers are getting super low on one knee, getting close, and they're doing that kind of flipping it up, whatever you call that, sweeping it up on a low pitch. And then, of course, people are going to blame the Cardinals coaching staff and, oh, they got him injured. So what do you think about that whole argument?
Yeah, I think it's a bad faith argument because I didn't hear anybody complaining about Wilson Contreras's setup position 2 weeks ago. In fact, he's been getting praised near and far for improving defensively, and pitch framing was one of those elements, right? He went from one of the worst in baseball. I mean, he was worse than a lot of the backup catchers at framing to now kind of middle of the pack and not a net negative, right? Just about a net neutral in his pitch framing, which is a large gain compared to where he had been. And yeah, it came at an expense, obviously. They paid a price for it, but I feel like that's the hindsight warriors coming out of the woodwork and claiming that, oh, the Cardinals did this. It's their fault. Whoever did this should be fired. I think that's crazy to me. Again, if you weren't talking about it 2 weeks ago, I don't want to hear you talk about it now. That's just the hindsight of now Wilson got injured doing it. And so you're happy to jump on the Cardinal coaching staff because there are a lot of other things that you could blame them for. There are a lot of things you could blame the front office for and the development staff for and all of the things that we have talked about that have been maybe not up to par with this Cardinals team. I think this is an example of the Cardinals getting involved with a trend that's been going around baseball. And just because your neighbor does it doesn't mean you have to do it either. But in sports, we all always talk about a copycat league. And I think teams are starting to realize, look, there is an advantage to be gleaned from this. How often have we seen a guy have a season-ending injury from a catcher's interference? Like, that's one of the worst that I've ever seen. JD Martinez swinging his bat and cracking it on his arm, on Wilson Contreras's arm, full speed with a full swing. And it's I've never seen one really that bad. So I think the risk in people's minds was maybe mitigated and you saw the benefit. And even Wilson Contreras, after it happened, said, I'm going to keep doing it when I get back. Like, they get paid on pitch framing, man. So until they go with an automatic ball strike system or umpires improve to the extent that they don't get fooled by this crap, it's going to continue happening. I know that we like to bemoan and say, it's so obvious these catchers are doing it. They're not even trying to be subtle with their framing. There's a reason for that. It's just like the warning label on an item that says, hey, don't eat this. It's because somebody's tried it before. You have to warn people at this point. It happens in MLB because it works on these umpires. There's a reason that all these catchers are doing it. So do I think that there is an obvious group to blame, person to blame? No, I think it's a combination of things. But the Cardinals coaching staff as the go-to blame game in this one isn't for me. I would look more to saying it just stands to reason that if you have a catcher trying to gain an edge, get a little closer to the plate, and batters have been doing it for years. They try to stand at the very back of the batter's box because it gives them that extra split second to be able to recognize a pitch and movement and velocity. And in the case of this instance, Martinez's foot was completely beyond the line, but I don't think that's unique. I think guys probably often do that to try to gain an edge. So you have two guys trying to gain an edge and they're meeting in a spot that makes it dangerous for the catcher. And we, I guess, would have to expect the MLB umpires to do something about it, and that they can't even call the balls and strikes effectively. So to say that they're going to institute, yeah, you got to stand by this line and you got to be here. I think everybody's just trying to gain that edge. And we saw that come out to play with the Wilson injury. Unfortunately, I just think that's what it boils down to for me.
Yeah. And I don't specifically blame the coaching staff for this particular incident. And I was trying to find this tweet as you were talking and I just found it. I think this is interesting though. This is about the coaching staff, but I don't want people to think I'm talking about this incident with Wilson Contreras. This is from a person named @Cardinals_live on Twitter. And I saw this a couple days ago. And I had never thought about it like this. And I think this is a really good tweet. So I want to give this person credit. Here's what it says. When the 2022 season ended, the Cards plans to come into 2023 with the same staff. The Cards planned. That was a typo. That was the plan. Jeff Albert quit. Mike Maddux went to Texas. Matt Holliday changed his mind. They hurried and scurried to promote and hire. They literally had a plan B staff. That plan B staff led them to one of the worst seasons ever in franchise history. The core of that plan B staff was retained for 2024. So we have a staff made up of guys the organization didn't even envision for those roles just 2 years ago, leading this team into possibly another losing season. It is wild when you think about it. And I had not thought about it like that. But look, there's a lot of truth to that. Clearly, the Cardinals wanted Mike Maddux and Jeff Albert to come back. And they went. Now, they had the whole offseason to replace them. The Matt Holliday deal obviously was different. Matt Holliday, one of those weird things where he changed his mind and they had to replace him there. But I don't know. I think that's really interesting. And I'm not blaming the coaching staff. And just so when, although I don't think the coaching staff is a value add, to be fair, and I'm going off on a tangent here, but I think people forget too, when we complained about Jeff Albert, that was, I believe, midseason 2021 before they went on the 17-game winning streak. And the next year, the offense was really good. So I think it was fair that people were calling for Jeff Albert's job when they were, which was about 2.5 years in, if you include the COVID season. But then he turned things around. Like, the offense was good in Albert's last year. But just what do you think about that take? Because, and just so people know, when I criticize Ollie, I'm also including the coaching staff. And I say that because for years, the Cardinals were I'd call them a value add. La Russa, Dave Duncan with the pitching staff, even Jose Oquendo defensively. I feel like there was value in the coaching staff. To me, it's at least now just neutral, and you can make a case that it's on the negative side, I think.
Yeah, and for a team that is going through it right now, whether it be at the plate or last year when it was pitching, do you have the experience level on that staff, even if they are neutral and they might be good coaches in a winning situation? Because who doesn't look good when your players are playing well? But when things go bad, what's the adjustment like? And last year, I don't think we got a ton of adjustments from the pitching perspective. I just don't think they had the right guys, though, personally. And I don't think the pitchers they did have who had their head in the right place. Honestly, blaming Wilson Contreras for a lot of the issues rather than owning up to some accountability themselves. I thought that was a problem with last year's team. I thought that was part of the clubhouse issues that when you hear now going, well, why does Ollie Marmol say the clubhouse is in a better spot this year? Well, because it is. And they don't have that sort of friction and tension in the way that they did last year. That's one of it. But then now this year, the offense isn't performing well. And does Turner Ward add value in finding a way to turn that around? I don't think that's an unfair thing at this point to say, no, he hasn't demonstrated that he does bring that to the table, considering it's going on right now. But it is still early in this season from a perspective of we're evaluating a coach on 2024. There's a world in which, as you mentioned, Jeff Albert turned it around in 21, or the offense did, whoever you want to credit for that. So if we're going to grade Turner Ward on the same scale, there's still room to improve when it comes to that. And this offense wasn't the problem last year. I know people like to look at the final numbers and say, well, 19th in runs scored, tied for 13th in OPS. Find what they were before they basically shut it down. Trade deadline happened and they shut it down. Anybody who was a little bit hurt was done for the year, and they just kind of mailed it in. I think the numbers were better before that. And that's not excusing what's happening now, but it's just to demonstrate that hitting coaches that you wanted gone then were able to turn things around. It's happened before. Perhaps it does happen again, whether I predict it will or not. I will say, though, before Jeff Albert left, I still feel like they were his detractors, even right as he left, because he sort of left was the wording of the pressure of the St. Louis, and he didn't like maybe taking the blame for some of the things when they would go wrong. Did Twitter really have anything to do with that? Who's to say? But I do think the point that's made about a plan B coaching staff is generally true. They did address it with as it pertains to Matt Holliday, because they added Joe McEwing just off the rack. They had to get a coach. It didn't work, and so they put him into the Yachty role, right? He's an advisor technically in the organization now, but you don't see him. What does he do? It doesn't really matter. They just had to keep paying him, and it's not nice to say you fired a guy. So Joe McEwing is still in the org, but they got their handpicked coach in Descalso. And so that is no longer a factor. I think that's not plan B. That's a plan A example for Ollie Marmol, and I think he likes having double D on the staff. But from a pitcher coach and hitting coach perspective, I don't think that's necessarily unfair not even a knock on the guys. It's not even a commentary on their qualifications or their skills. They had coaches that left of their own accord, and the Cardinals promoted from within rather than, you know, believing they needed to make a bold move elsewhere. Is that an example of Mozeliak seemingly always likes the players that live in your backyard, so it's easier to get him to stay? If a guy's in the org, it's easier to get him to get bumped up, and you don't have to worry about, well, is there going to be philosophical friction? Is there going to be, you know, what's it going to look like? They got ready-made coaches that were going to be happy to have the roles and maybe not worry about philosophical differences as you maybe did with a Mike Schilt.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, I'm just focusing on the coaching staff here because I think it's interesting. I liked that tweet. I wanted to read that tweet. And I always think, look, it's always going to be more about Mozeliak in the front office and then also the players. So I don't want people to think that, oh, it's all the coaching staff. But let's be real. We've done this podcast however many times, 15 times. We've bitched and complained about John Mozeliak in the front office tons of times. And
we talk about it all. That's the thing. We do this podcast weekly. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And I still can't believe the offense is this bad. I really can't. I can't explain it. And being fair, I don't think anybody came into the season and said this. Look, if you just said the offense was middle of the pack, okay. If you even wanted to go on a limb and say maybe this is going to be the 20th best offense, okay. I probably wouldn't agree, but I wouldn't push back. But I mean, literally one of the worst offenses in baseball. I can't really put that one together. How about this argument, though? We'll kind of switch it up. Talking about pitching, but also pitching depth. So over the weekend, Cardinals lose the series to the White Sox. Steven Matz is hurt. So you have Matthew Liberatore throw essentially a bullpen game. He's kind of an opener. What do you go? 3 2/3, whatever it was, 50 pitches. He did a really nice job. But to me, it's more about, it seems like the Cardinals don't even have one sixth starter. I mean, you know, in a baseball season, you usually need 8-9 starters. And I'm just thinking about some of the names. Obviously, Drew Rahm is hurt, but I'm looking at the stats right now at Memphis. You really only have one pitcher who has good numbers, and that's Sem Roberts.
Roberts.
But yes. What is it?
Sem Roberts.
Okay, Roberts.
There you go.
But I mean, like, some of the names we've heard in recent years, and the two that I think most people think of are Graceffo and McGreevy. Mm-hmm. And you would just think that at this point in their careers, Graceffo, and I understand sometimes you have to be on turn. I get that. But it's more about, like, Graceffo last year, I feel like I was waiting for him to make an impact in the big leagues. This McGreevy seems like he might be a bullpen guy, and he's a first-round pick. And I just think it speaks to, and look, Zach Thompson, he just got sent down. He was kind of, you know, up and down and all that. But, I mean, where's the pitching depth? It seems like the Cardinals have zero pitching depth in terms of starters.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it when you mentioned Graceffo and McGreevy. Those are two of the names that, because they didn't take steps forward last year to make themselves viable in the big leagues, by, like, 2023, they were supposed to be able to debut. John Mozeliak doesn't utter their names unprompted as guys who could help us this year in January of 23, unless he thinks that summer they're going to have a chance to do that. And that's what happened at winter warmup back in 2023, before the season that went off the rails. And you look at the numbers those guys had, like a 4.9 ERA for Graceffo, who had been the minor league pitcher of the year before that, and a 4.49 ERA for McGreevy. And McGreevy doesn't strike many guys out. That was the case last year. It's the case this year. He's Michaelis-y in that regard, and that's not something that Cardinal fans are excited about right now, because if Michaelis wasn't making 16 mil for this year and next year, you'd move him to the bullpen too. Like, that was a guy they drafted in the first round. And I've said this before, and I've probably said it to you, I'm not the guy to look on draft night and go, you blew it, you drafted the wrong kid, because that's his night, that's his dream's coming true, the first step of a dream is coming true. And so that's just not my style. I'm going to be inclined to go, okay, here's what they see that could work out. Michael McGreevy has good command. Good, you know, here are the characteristics you like. No, he doesn't project maybe to be a big strikeout arm. And we'd spent a lot of time talking swing and miss in the years since. And I almost wonder if that draft pick inspires it, because the Cardinals have watched him develop and go, oh man, you know, we spent a first rounder on this kid, but he's kind of Dakota Hudson. And that's, you know, that's not going to help anybody. That's not the direction you necessarily want to be going. Maybe he reinvents himself and is able to push through. We'll see. I think he's a guy, and soon Graceffo too, you're going to have to put on the 40 or they are exposed to Rule 5. I think at some point they should be getting opportunities just to see. You know, Graceffo's got a 4.9 ERA in Memphis this year, but he's averaging about a K per inning. And maybe that weirdness, the strike zone's different down there. Maybe he comes up and he gets a jolt and never has to go back and could be viable. We don't know, but they're not giving you the numbers in AAA last year or this year that make you think they're on the cusp of greatness when they get to the big leagues. And that is a concern because, as you mentioned, we've been kind of circling the drain when it comes to guys like Libby and Zach Thompson for a couple of years, and those guys have not necessarily cemented themselves. I also think the Cardinals kind of shoot themselves in the foot sometimes. If you were going to do the Libertor thing and give him a chance to stretch out to 50 pitches in a bullpen start, and you get maybe the best case scenario from him, the only run that scored was the ball that Carlson went back on and kind of gave up on. I don't know what that was from him in center field, but that's the only run that scores on Libby, and he looks really good. You get kind of the best case scenario from him and Kyle Leahy, who got you through six innings total. And then all of that just to burn up your bullpen extra, make Gio throw and have to go IL, just to not commit to Libby in the rotation after that. Like, they're going to, with the off day now because of the rain out, they're going to push everything back and delay that decision. But like, if you're going to have Libby do that, why not have Libby do it? I wasn't necessarily in favor of him getting the start in the first place because I thought you're going to come up against an innings crisis. And that ends up being the case when guys like Gio have to come in and you lose that game as a result. Now, they also didn't score. But I would look at it and say, find out about some of these guys, even if the numbers in AAA aren't great, because you're right. From the ones that they've continued to trot out there, they either haven't seen the consistency to know that they're a reliable starting pitching option as the number six, or they try him once and then they go, yeah, but we like him in the bullpen. I just think they're kind of wishy-washy with the decision-making process on these guys, and they're not really doing themselves any favors in that regard. That's just me.
And you mentioned, I think it was McGreevy, and you said you called him Michaelis-y.
Michaelis-y.
Which, maybe a few years ago would have been a compliment. Unfortunately, it is no longer. And again, folks, so everybody knows, I know the offense is the problem. The offense is the big problem. I can't explain it, okay? I can't explain it. But Miles Michaelis, what do you do with this guy? I mean, I know the answer, and he's under contract for next year. Now, I will say this, because in the past, I've always cited FIP, and I do it sometimes when I like Jack Flaherty. If you look at Jack Flaherty, his FIP was showing you that he's actually pitching pretty dang well. And you saw him shove against the Cardinals. I think his FIP is under 3. He's striking out the world. So even though Miles Michaelis' ERA is terrible, 6.43, his FIP is 4.74. Still not great, but it is about what? That's a 1.75-ish runs different. So maybe he has had some bad luck, but also he doesn't strike people out, so he's going to give up a lot of contact. Right now, he leads the league in hits allowed with 55, leads the league in earned runs allowed with 30. And, you know, I don't have the stats on this, but I swear to God, I've never seen a pitcher who gives up more O2 bombs, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And look, I almost laugh when I say this. So that pitch to Nimmo, it looked like it was below the zone or maybe right there. But, you know, lefties like the ball low. It was a hanger. I don't know. Like, I don't think that was, you tip your cap. I mean, if you're hanging a curveball low to a lefty, he's going to hit that ball out sometimes. So I don't know, man. I feel like I have no confidence when Miles Michaelis goes out there. I don't think other Cardinal fans do either.
Yeah, and that was not I laugh because that wasn't the worst hanger that he's given up. There have been far worse pitches in two strike counts that he's given up for bombs. But if you want to go with this year, and especially if you want to look to last year, it was happening all the time. And I feel bad, but the joke that I've gone to as well, it's just more of the soft contact. They whispered it over the wall, just like a nice little kiss, and it's a home run, next thing you know. The thing about FIP with Michaelis, it used to be, like we talked a couple of years ago when he was an all-star, had a 3.29 ERA, but a 3.87 FIP. So he was actually outperforming his FIP. And then last year, he was underperforming his FIP with ERA by about a half a run. In this year, the ERA is worse than FIP by more than a run and a half. It's a pretty large gap there. But with the way that he's pitching and making mistakes and leaving pitches over the middle of the plate and giving up contact, what FIP doesn't measure is all the base hits. It accounts for your homers. It accounts for walks and accounts for hit by pitches and strikeouts. He doesn't strike many people out, but somehow the FIP is not all that impacted because he gives up so many other types of hits that I feel like it's a little bit Waino-esque when last year Waino's stuff just wasn't good and he wasn't always giving up bombs. But I feel like Waino last year, and maybe it applies to Michaelis now, are some of the easiest pitchers you'll ever find to get a single off of, just a base hit, because the stuff is coming in flat and you've got time to react to it. And any hitter that has big league credentials can serve it the opposite way or just kind of dink it over the third baseman. It's almost like just placing the ball where you want as a hitter. It might not always be a home run, but I feel like Michaelis has been very hittable where the hitters can almost choose where the contact goes. And that's not something that you're usually, but do you get a sense of what I'm talking about? Like Wainwright was that way last year. And this year, I feel like that's maybe an explanation for the FIP differential. And sometimes you can look at FIP and say, here's why there's a difference. And it could be sustainable that it stays different, because when Miles makes those mistakes over the middle, guy might not be a power hitter, but he knows how to hit a single or a double on some of these mistakes over the middle of the plate.
Yeah. And here's what I'd say. And look, I played a little bit of baseball, a little bit of college baseball, nothing like any of these guys we're talking about, but I would put it like this. When you're a hitter, sometimes you have pitchers that they just give you an uncomfortable at bat, right? Especially if you're 0-2. And I mean, if somebody's nasty, if somebody has crazy velo, you're never super comfortable. And then when you're 0-2, you're already like, oh shit, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
And I look at Miles Michaelis as the exact opposite in terms of, I don't think hitters are uncomfortable when they face Miles Michaelis with an 0-0 count. And also when it's 0-2. Now, you know, he might strike somebody out every once in a while, but I feel like, hey, when a batter's up there and it's 0-2, they still feel like they have a good chance to get this guy because he's not nasty, right? I mean, he can load the zone up, doesn't walk a lot of guys, but I feel like there's a lot of guys who can kind of just dig in there and feel comfortable of getting a base hit or hitting a three-run homer, even if they're down 0-2. And again, I don't have the stats, but man, I feel like he's given up a bunch of 0-2 bombs.
And I don't know if at this stage of your life, Charlie, you're participating in this, but I think of it like on the video game, MLB The Show, you could be pitching with a guy and his energy total is low. And if you're playing online against somebody and you've seen this guy kind of hit some good hits against you before, you're going, where can I put a pitch right now that's not, if I throw this in the strike zone, this guy's probably going to hit it off me. But I also don't have the energy to be able to get a chase. Where below the zone or where is a safe spot to put a chase pitch that's actually going to look enticing to a hitter? I feel like Miles gets into those spots where, yeah, you can always go for the chase, but you're going to be 2-2 before you know it, because are they really going to be falling for some of those pitches if you don't really make them deceptive and make them close? And if you still throw a ball in the zone on 0-2 or in any two-strike count, they can hit it. I mean, it's not nasty, like you said, and if you're throwing it in somebody's wheelhouse, it doesn't matter if they saw it coming or not. There are oftentimes with the curveball too, they have time to adjust to it. So I think they can still kind of sit fastball and adjust to the off-speed stuff. And if it's going to land somewhere in the zone, that's in their swing path, and they can do something with it.
Okay, let's, I'm trying to check the standings here. Yeah, I knew that. The old Cardinals are in last place, 15-21. So you are 6 games back of the Brewers and Cubs, who are technically tied, although they have different records. And you know what? I was on Twitter last night, but also my buddy, one of my very good friends, was at the Cubs game, and he was kind of showing us pictures and whatnot. And then, of course, the Cubs, it was just such a dichotomy last night, right? When Wilson Contreras breaks his freaking arm, the Cardinals lose yet again for what, the fourth straight game. And then you see the highlights of a raucous Wrigley walk-off homer. Everybody's having fun. The weather looked great. They're singing Go Cubs Go. You could hear it all the way through Wrigleyville.
I love Chicago in May. Love it.
So do I. And it was just like, man, dude, like you couldn't have two different spots that teams are in right now.
Yeah, the vibes are so bad, and that was before Contreras, their best hitter, got injured. I said the only way it could have been worse the other night when that happened to Wilson is if Sonny Gray had slipped on the dugout stairs or something, because he wasn't pitching. But if you lose him to something flukish, then you're really screwed. Yeah, the vibes are not good. And you could look at the bright side of it and go, look, they're 15-21. The whole National League outside of the Rockies and the Marlins is basically, when you're talking about the last wild card, to the last team that could even think about one right now, which might be the Cardinals. The Cardinals are three games back or so of the third wild card right now. I think it's actually the Nationals who are 18-17, which is probably not going to last, but who knows? But the Cardinals are like three and a half back of that. So everybody's bunched up. There's room to play better baseball. But do we see from this roster right now the ability to start playing inspired baseball when the guy who you had said had been really carrying you as far as he could, basically single-handedly on the offensive side, is now gone? He's gone for 6 to 8 to 10, whatever it's going to be, weeks.
Yeah, it's funny because I just brought up those standings, and you're right. So the Cardinals are 3.5 games back of, it's right now Braves, Cubs, Nationals. And it's kind of funny because when you look at the standings, I would call the Cardinals the last of the National League teams that don't really suck. Like, you know, the Marlins and the Rockies are 10 games back, but that just goes to show you. So you have two teams who are just dog crap. And then the Cardinals right now are essentially the last of everybody else, right? Like, it just goes to show you too. It really does when you look at it. I mean, these wild cards, it damn well keeps almost everybody in it. You have to be real shitty to not be in it.
I think there needs to be a banner for this. It's like, we're not quite dog crap. I think that's the way you frame it. You can get some butts in seats on that. And the Cardinals haven't had many butts in seats, so it might be nice to have a nice little promotion, a we're not dog crap promotion. Maybe they take the bobblehead that was Waino and his dog, and then you tie it in somehow that way. Doggy bags for everybody. I don't know. But the Cardinals right now are, it could be worse. You could be one of the teams that already knows it's not. And right now the Cardinals are kind of one of those teams that they can at least still pretend that they're competitive, even if, you know, a lot of the fans don't see it. And they can say internally they see it. But right now, again, if I had to pick yes or no, today I'm picking no. 3 of 4 from Milwaukee, maybe I turn it around in my own mind and go, all right, they demonstrated something to me. But I'm kind of waiting to see it. I'm in like the show me mode of, I'm not counting you out, but if somebody stops me on the street and asks me, are they making the playoffs? I go, well, as of now, I'd probably tell you no.
Okay, so what do you think about Paul Goldschmidt? The other day, you know, we kind of joked about it, that with Gio, you know, it's fake injury season, and sure enough, they find that shoulder impingement the next day after his terrible outing. I mean, he's had a terrible season, but you knew the second that Ollie in his post game said he doesn't look right, knew that meant, you just knew. I would have bet my life he was hitting the IL the next day. So Paul Goldschmidt, obviously not a pitcher, you're not going to put him on the IL, but we've seen this in the past. I feel like they did this with Matt Carpenter a couple of times. I feel like we're entering the territory of 2 days off of mental rest. I feel like that's the next step.
Yeah, and I want to say, was Goldie in the lineup today, Wednesday, before the rain delay or the rain out? They had to have released a lineup. I can't remember if he was in it or not, and that is kind of an interesting question, because it seemed, and that question was even asked of Ollie after Tuesday's game, like, do you think that there could be some room here to maybe, yeah, Goldie was not in the lineup. I just looked it up as I'm talking here. So I think maybe they were about to do that. I don't know if with the rain out, it counts as one of those days, but yeah, you plug Burleson into first base, which is what they were going to do. I don't mind doing that, going to Milwaukee for a day or two. He's 0-for-23 in the month of May, Paul Goldschmidt is, and he's taken 3 walks to 10 strikeouts. That's it's May 8th and he's 0-for-the-month. So, and you can look in that game on Tuesday at the big spots he was in, like I had said earlier, the worst at bat maybe I've seen from him, where when Ollie talks about approach stuff, he said, we're not seeing competitive at bats. That was what he said on Monday. And then Tuesday, they come out of the gate, Donovan homer, Newt Barr doesn't swing at any of those bad pitches. He draws a walk. Contreras swings at the best pitch he sees and doubles. Like, you were starting to see, okay, this is a microcosm of what they want to be offensively. But then you get to the ninth inning and Goldschmidt, strike down the middle, strike on the outer half, takes them both, and then gets jumpy with an off-speed that he kind of probably sees his eyes light up and turns on it, but it's way foul. You know, it wasn't even close to keeping it fair. And then he strikes out on a pitch 18 inches off the plate. He's in a spot right now where if you're not going to IL him and you're not going to option him, you just need to probably give him a mental reset. And I agree, a multi-day mental reset.
Yeah, this is a guy whose career OPS plus is 141, you know, 41% above league average. Right now, he's a 60. I mean, that's kind of what in the bad years, what Andrew Kisner was giving you, maybe even a little better in some of those bad years until, you know, Kiz had a good year last year. But I mean, Paul Goldschmidt, the numbers are bad, but it's also, it's not, remember the 1 year we always talk about, the 1 year that Matt Carpenter started slow, but the Cardinals said, no, your hard hit numbers are actually good. You're just having really bad luck. That's not the case with Paul Goldschmidt. He does look lost. Some of his swings, he looks like he's kind of in between. He's not discerning pitches, which to me is also more about that you probably think you have to cheat a little bit maybe to catch up.
Yeah.
With some velo. I saw what he's really bad against changeups. I don't know, man. I said this, I remember in the offseason, and I was thinking about the Cardinals have so many guys who are like 35, and it kind of gets back to Waino last year. You just never know the year that you're, as the kids say, washed, you know, and I don't like saying that because I love Paul Goldschmidt just as a player and a human being. But here's what I'll say. If you have five dudes who are 35 or over, statistically, there's probably a good chance that one of those dudes is, quote, washed. You know what I'm saying? And I'm throw Lynn, Gibson, Michaelis, Arenado's not that old, but Goldie. And look, is there a chance that Miles Michaelis is done being a good MLB pitcher? I mean, that might be the case. Is there a chance that Paul Goldschmidt is done being an above average Major League Baseball player? I would not have said that before the season, but that could be the case. He's not young. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, there is a percentage chance, right? I think he's turning 37 in September, and he's in great physical shape. But I think a lot of it is mental right now, too, because he's had slumps before. But if your physical skill just declines a touch, how much more difficult then does it become to pull yourself out of a slump when you're in one, when you can't just lean back on your physical traits that he's had? I would say that, you know, the physical traits, if they're still a 9 out of 10, let's just say for the sake of argument, he's been a 10 out of 10, and right now he's feeling like a 9 physically, because he's a year older than he was. Is that enough to then you now second guess everything you're doing? And like you mentioned, I thought it was a good line of he's not discerning the pitches. And that, again, he's maybe used to just being able to physically make up for something when he's going through a slump, and that pulls you out of it that much more quickly. And right now we're just not seeing that from him. And the home run that he did hit, he had the one on opening day, and then the next one he hit was just the worst pitch I've seen in MLB this season, which to his credit, he hit it. But those sorts of things are going to be few and far between when there's a book out on, hey, you, as long as you pinch Paul Goldschmidt this way, you're probably going to end up being okay. And that's unfortunate. Is he washed? I have no idea. But yeah, it's a strategy that may be coming back to bite the Cardinals when you do have that number of players at that certain age. And people talked about it a lot with the rotation thing. Well, they're going to stay healthy. You know, the knock on wood, they've largely stayed healthy outside of Steven Matz at this point, which is maybe a reason that, you know, you talked about pitching depth. Mozeliak didn't really want to talk about the depth in spring. It was, well, we want the five that we have to go the distance for us. And that's a nice sentiment, but it doesn't always work out that way. And so you're seeing on the pitching side, them dealing with a little bit of that. And then on the side offensively, you've optioned one of your young guys that you thought, all right, if a Goldie doesn't pan out, at least a Jordan Walker's taking the next step. At least a Nolan Gorman's taking the next step. It's been the worst case scenario where whatever your one percentile possibility was for Paul Goldschmidt, that's playing out. Whereas like you and I, if we were a little pessimistic on Goldie, we might've said, we're like, that's our 30th percentile is that he'll be a 700 OPS and just not viable as a great player at this point. Whereas he's like on the bottom rung of what the range of outcomes could have conceivably been. You said he was 141 OPS plus for his career. Okay. 40% better than the average player. Now he's 40% worse than the average player. That switch happens from a career norm to bang the next year. You're seeing him as one of the worst hitters. That's a hard thing for a team to come around to and make up for when their young guys aren't taking steps forward, they're stepping back. And when you have a catcher that takes a step forward as a veteran leader and then gets hurt, it's a lot of yuck right now for the Cardinals.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the starting pitching ERA through baseball. And the Cardinals are 21st. So they're, look, I think a lot of people have said, hey, this starting staff has given you what you thought or better. They're bottom third in baseball. Now, to be fair, That's with a 4.28 ERA. The pitching overall from starters is also better because I remember last year, I think the Cardinals starters ERA was 5.06. So it's actually much improved from an ERA standpoint, but they're still not one of the good rotations in baseball. And again, folks, the offense is the problem. But I feel like I still think the offense is going to improve. And the reason I say that is I just don't think they can be this bad. You know, I'm not saying they're going to be even middle of the pack, but this offense is going to improve because there's just no way, in my opinion, that this offense can be this bad for 162. There's too many proven commodities in there. On the other hand, though, I think you could make the case that the starting staff has kind of stuck with it here, but you can see it starting to crack with the Matt's injury, with Miles Michaelis, a guy who probably wouldn't be a starter if the team had other options or if he wasn't under contract or if they were in a pennant race. Like, if they were in a pennant race with 2 months to go, you're probably pulling Miles Michaelis from the rotation. You know what I'm saying? So, look, the starters have given you a chance to win, but I also wonder how long that can last because I can see it starting to fray.
And I think it is a little bit like the commentary you made at the beginning there of most people's narrative is the Cardinal rotation is giving you everything you could have hoped for was true when people were saying it. I haven't heard it the last couple of days. Miles Michaelis single-handedly with that fifth inning on Tuesday, I think took the Cardinals from probably maybe 15th or 16th or 17th in team or starters ERA down to where they are now at 21st. That like it's still probably early enough in the season where he gets blown up in one inning. They've been middle of the pack, but you now can't make that wholesale commentary about rotations giving you what you'd hope for. Really, the only guys giving you what you'd hope for are the guys you brought in. So credit to Mo for maybe getting some of those right. But Sonny's been great. Gibby's been great. Lance Lynn, to me, does not throw enough strikes to be the innings eater that they wanted to be. He usually throws 40-something balls in an outing and throws 94 pitches, and he's out after five. That's been a... Like, I like Lance Lynn, and it's fun when he's cooking, but when he's not, it can be a bit of a slog, and he gives up two or three walks. He goes into deep counts, and he hasn't been that innings eater as a result. Now, I'm the farthest thing from trying to bash Lynn here because he's been pretty good. The ERA in the mid-threes or whatever it is. But the guys that have been brought in, doing a nice job. The mainstays and the guys that were returning from last year's rotation, Michaelis and Matz, have not been up to par. Matz, in a way you could have predicted because he doesn't often stay healthy. And Lynn, or pardon me, and Michaelis, he was supposed to bounce back and he's gotten worse in the same areas he was struggling in last year. They have deteriorated even further, and that is a concern. So, no, the rotation as a whole, there are cracks showing. You can't say it's been giving you what you want when number five is on the IL and number four effectively is sitting with a 6.4 ERA. It's just tough.
And you don't have a six or a seven, seemingly, or they don't have anybody they really trust for that role. So, hey, we'll go a little shorter on this one so I can get it out as soon as possible tonight here on Wednesday as we record. And, hey, I was going to go to the game. I was going to go to the game as a fan today, and I was excited, and then I saw the weather and all that. So, like, nope. Brendan, I know. I'll always throw it. So now I can go, I guess, August 5th on a Monday. I'll look forward to that game now.
Or 15.
Four months from now. I'll let you empty your notebook. What else you got that I didn't touch on?
I don't know if I have a notebook.
That's fine.
I don't know. I said that for the first time, I'm calling the Cardinals not a playoff team. If I had to pick it today to most people that may not be saying really very much because a lot of Cardinals fans have been like, yeah, where you been? That's been my opinion, but I don't think that means they're dead, but like it's an uphill climb. And I don't know, barring a major shift, which, again, we could be having a different conversation in 3 weeks going, remember when the offense was bad? My gosh, finally everybody's cooking. And Walker came back, and he's great. And everybody's – Gorman remembered how to hit. Maybe it happens, Cardinals fans. But for now, looking at the lay of the land, it's hard to envision everything suddenly snapping into shape. And so that's where I – if you are doom and gloom of the season, I get it. I would also say, man, summer's hardly begun. And maybe there can be some fun for this baseball season. But also, expectations were high coming in. The Cardinals sold those expectations that they were going to fix it this year. And if it doesn't happen, the anger, maybe don't be vitriolic, but the anger and the disappointment is going to be very real and tangible for fans.
That's what sucks, man, when you really think about it. Because, look, the last 2 months of last year did not matter for the Cardinals. And, hell, I mean, my kids are still in school. And school hasn't even been let out. And as you said, summer hasn't started. And again, I'm not saying they're dead. You said they're not dead. Maybe they're on life support. Maybe they're like, remember Terry Schiavo? That's a reference. Google that.
Gosh.
I'm just saying. That's maybe not wow. proper. But you know, when I first started,
not being proper.
I shouldn't laugh. But when I first started in TV, I remember that was right when the Terry Schiavo case was going on, and I feel like there was a daily update on Terry Schiavo for about a year straight. It's never good for a baseball team to be compared to Terry Schiavo. But what I'm saying is, like, could you imagine if the Cardinals actually do suck and we're only, like, what are we, 40 games in? I mean, three-fourths of the season. If this team sucks, God, that's going to be depressing.
I'm not even, like, a Cardinals fan like I used to be. Like, you understand what I mean by that. I can't even imagine having to do this for another four months and doing my own podcast on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@bschaefer12. It's going to be a long summer if this is what we're dealing with again. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. That's why you need a NASCAR channel, all right? That's why you need
Dude,
a NASCAR
how
channel.
How about the finish to the race over the weekend? What? You guys must have been cooking. And I saw that you posted the stats from the Kenny channel, 25 million views, 2 million hours of watch time. Maybe I do need a NASCAR channel, but I would also maybe have to find a Kenny Wallace. That's where you have a bit of a leg up because that guy is instant offense.
Yeah, I will say this. I had this conversation, and as we're trying to wrap up the show, and we can't now that we're talking about NASCAR, but I was talking to somebody today at the gym, and I said, you know what? NASCAR is a really fun sport to follow because if you only watch on Sundays for 2, 3, 4 hours, and hell, you can really kind of watch the start, go do something, watch the finish. Like, you can get a pretty good lay of the land, and it's once a week on Sundays. Whereas if you really want to be locked into the Cardinals, you pretty much got to watch like 20 hours a week of baseball.
I think there are fans, and like, if you're doing this, kudos to you. I think there are some fans, and the reason I think it is because I've seen them comment and say they kind of do this, that'll follow a little bit because they want to be in it, but they can't really bring themselves right now to watch it all. But then they go listen to Low Hanging Fruit, and they go listen to Charlie's updates and my channel. Like, people will do that, and I think they're ready. People are ready to reinvest because they want to keep the lay of the land. They'll listen to the podcast, but they're not maybe watching every single game because it's depressing right now. You know, they might like you and me, Charlie, but they don't really like the Cardinals right now. They love them, but they don't like them. You know what I mean? And I think that people are kind of consuming it that way, which, again, I honestly think is pretty smart because we can kind of give you a little levity on these situations. We'll talk about it when it's crappy, and we'll say it is. But we also can give some levity, and you don't have to invest 3 hours a night for a full summer if it's going to be one of those kind of summers.
Yeah, and I promise we will end this. And when I say this, I'm chuckling because I want the Cardinals to be good. It was so much fun. It was so much, and I'm not even a Cardinals fan. I'm not from St. Louis. But it was so much fun covering the Cardinals, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Some of the best years of my life covering sports. So I want them to be good. I want them to win the World Series. But I will say this, from a YouTube perspective, man, the views go crazy when it's really bad. Like, the views on Sunday.
Yeah. You get 9,000 on just like you're on your patio.
I mean, Monday,
talking.
I just sat on my patio and just said, this team looks like crap. And I mean, people were all about it, man.
I was so pissed off at you. I didn't say anything, but I was like, this freaking guy is just sitting on his patio. And like, I always kind of check, your channel is bigger than mine, so we put Low Hanging Fruit there to maximize the audience. But I'm trying to grow my thing, and we're up to 3,000 subscribers. Honestly, our second podcast weekly, you and me, should just be like a YouTube podcast where we just talk YouTube stuff, because I think people would like that too. But I saw your stuff out there, and I'm like, man, this guy is just capitalizing on the bad, which is what you kind of have to do. But I'll push back in one way. I think if a team won 85 games and they snuck into the playoffs and they lost in the first round or whatever, kind of like the Cardinals did in 22, that you wouldn't get a lot of a return on that investment. I would say there's nothing that would compare for you or me or anybody doing a Cardinal YouTube channel. If they have a long run into October, into the World Series, whether they win or lose that World Series, you give me a 6-game series in the World Series that the Cardinals are in, win or lose. And I think that is like that makes our channels, I think. because you and I would take advantage of that and say, hey, we're locked in every single day of October. Just give me one of those, because we would be in hog heaven with the way that I think people would be invested when it really is on the line in October. I just haven't been around for that from a YouTube standpoint yet. And we've been kind of waiting. Cardinals fans have been waiting too.
I think though, I mean, dude, people were pretty damn excited for that Philly series, but it ended in the blink. That ended in the blink of, I mean, literally when you're talking about it, from the time game one started to the time the series ended was probably 30 hours.
Yeah.
Something like that. All right. I'll shut up now so we can get this thing posted. Great work, Brendan. You mentioned your YouTube channel as well. Thank you, everybody. Please comment, like, subscribe, share the channel and the show, and subscribe to Brendan, and put this on social media, put it in your group text, and we will all get through this Cardinal season together, folks. We're a team. It's a team effort. #ForTheLou. All right.
God.
See ya.
See ya.